So, hello everyone. I'm stepping in for a colleague, Wan Zhan, who's traveling actually this week. But there's a group of us who've been working on something called WebCL, and we'd like to describe this technology for you. So first of all, just what is WebCL? Basically, it's a binding to OpenCL. Now that may not add much information, but OpenCL is kind of a cousin or a sibling of OpenGL. So it's something that may be supported by GPUs. But rather than for 3D graphics, OpenCL focuses on general purpose computation. It allows you to run compute jobs, if you like, on the GPU or perhaps on a many-core processor.
You want this one?
Oh, sure.
You should take your badge off first. Just end up scratching. There you go. You can just put this in your pocket. Okay.
Can everyone hear this? Okay, good. Thanks. Right, so WebCL is this binding to OpenCL, which, like I was saying, is a way for programming general-purpose compute jobs on the GPU. It enables significant hardware acceleration compared to JavaScript for a couple of reasons. First of all, you're running essentially native code, so you get a boost in performance typically from going from JavaScript to native code. But secondly, you can write code which exercises the capabilities of the GPU itself. Now, an important point here, WebCL is not currently part of the Tizen browser, so if you get one of those development devices, don't expect WebCL to be supported on it. It's something which is not yet standardized. That is in process, and my colleague later on in this presentation will give you an update on the status of that. It's being standardized in Kronos. This is the group where OpenGL, WebGL, etc. Originate. So in this talk, I'd like to describe some background, why we think WebCL might be of interest to developers. To understand WebCL, you have to know a little bit about OpenCL, so we'll talk about that. Hopefully, we'll be able to show some demos here. And then go into the nuts and bolts of actually programming with WebCL, and a little bit of a discussion of a prototype that we've been working on at Samsung. And then, as I mentioned, we'll have an update on the standardization progress. So, first of all, why would WebCL be of interest? Well, many of the new mobile applications have high compute demands. Think of augmented reality, where you might be doing feature tracking. You have live camera data. You have to extract features from that, and then you have to track those frame to frame. Or maybe you're doing video processing. You've got a nice little video processing application. You want to do things like merge or fade or some type of transition from one scene to another. You have to compute those new frames. Maybe you're doing some type of filtering effect on the video. Computational photography is another example. Perhaps you're stitching together some very high resolution images already to get one of these great big panoramic shots. And then 3D games is another area. You've got lots of particles flying around. You want to know if they're colliding. Maybe you want to do some type of physical simulation, water, smoke. Those things require a lot of compute to get high frame rates. Another part of the motivation is very basic, and that is, essentially, GPUs give you more flops per energy, per watt consumption. And furthermore, it seems to be increasing at a higher rate than CPU. So for mobile devices where every little ounce of power consumption is critical, There's many benefits to running your big compute jobs on the GPU rather than CPU. And then finally, HTML5 and the web platforms. So as we've heard, HTML5 has many benefits. It allows us this great flexibility and ease of integration with websites and services. There's a huge development community for HTML5. But what is perhaps one of the weak spots of HTML5? Performance is probably what people would reply. Many would reply, particularly when you have, as I was saying, these very compute-intensive applications. People want good performance in those cases. So let's now talk a little bit about OpenCL, just what that is, because WebCL builds on this. So first of all, it's a C-based interface, at least in one of its API specifications. It's cross-platform. There's OpenCL implementations for Linux, for macOS, for Windows. We're starting to see OpenCL supported by the mobile GPUs, and similarly, you see drivers for those devices. Another important point about OpenCL is this notion of a kernel, what they call a kernel. So if you've worked with OpenGL, OpenGL-ES, you know there's this notion of a shader, vertex shaders, fragment shaders. These are little kind of nuggets of code written in a C-like language that you essentially download onto your GPU, and they run there. The OpenCL equivalent is this notion of a kernel. Kernels can be built at runtime, so your web application, when it runs, it might actually compile that kernel and install it, if you like. Or they can potentially be built at, let's say, application packaging time. OpenCL was really designed for high-performance scientific computing as one of the main use cases. And there's very well-defined numerical accuracy, kind of determinacy of how an OpenCL application will behave numerically. And then finally, you get a very rich set of built-in functions that are kind of hardwired onto the GPU, doing things like vector, cross, or dot products, sign operations, etc. Now, OpenCL talks about what they call a platform model. And let me kind of go through the main parts of that. First of all, a host, think of that as your kind of main device, your main CPU, can be connected to one or more OpenCL devices. So if you have a PC, think of graphics cards. Those graphics cards could be OpenCL devices, and you might have several of them attached to your PC. An OpenCL device itself is a collection of compute units, is the term used. Just think of these as cores. And each compute unit has one or more processing elements. So think of those as essentially threads. Another point is OpenCL tries to be general to cover the many different ways people can build both GPUs and many core devices. So processing elements can either be SIMD, single instruction, multiple data, or single program, multiple data. So in the SIMD case, each of these processing elements is essentially processing the same instruction, but they've got a little bit of, they've got different data. But in the SIMD case, the processing elements can have essentially their own program counters, so those threads can diverge and follow different paths. Okay. Another part of OpenCL is what they call the execution model. And again, there's some concepts here, so I'll try and go through them quickly. One is the kernel, as I've mentioned. So this is a unit of executable code. Think of it a bit like a C function. Kernels can, you can configure an application to use kernels in a data parallel manner, where that kernel is instantiated many times. Each one has a different piece of data. Or you can have a program where you have different kernels performing different tasks. What OpenCL calls a program is a collection of kernels and the functions that they define. And think of that a little bit like a dynamic library. So it's loaded by the application and linked at runtime. Then you have the notion of command queue. So this is the way that the application talks to the OpenCL device. It issues commands. And those commands are typically, I want to execute this kernel, or I want to transfer this memory, this data to you, or read back from you. Finally, we have the notion of a work item. So this is the execution of a kernel by a processing element, a thread. So a work item is a little hunk of work. And then a work group is a collection of related work items. Now, let me kind of show an example there to make that a little bit clearer. Let's say we wanted to do something with photos or video frames. So we've got a whole mess of pixels here. And we might take a little segment of that. And this is it expanded. Each of these pixels is basically going to be a work item. So that kernel is going to get executed for each pixel. But we might have groups of kind of related pixels, this kind of tile here, which is what we call a work group. So work items would be the number of pixels you have. The number of work groups is the number of tiles you have. And then there's this notion of the work group size, which is basically the number of pixels in a tile. And typically, you'll want to match the work group size to the capabilities of the GPU. You can query the GPU and say, what is your preferred work group size? Maybe it's 64, maybe it's 496. And that will allow you to determine the size of the tiles in an application like this. OK, then another thing is the OpenCL memory model. It's a hierarchy. Basically, there's two parts here. The top part here is the OpenCL device, and the bottom part here is the host, your kind of traditional part of the platform. Going from the top, we have private memory. So this is just accessible by a particular work item. So here in this example, we have two work groups, each with two work items, and they each have their own private memory. Then you have some local memory, which can be shared by the work item. And you have global constant memory, which is visible to all the work items and all the work groups. None of these work items can see host memory. Instead, the host has to kind of push stuff down through the global memory. There's basically two ways of getting stuff into the work items. One is by passing it into global memory. And the second way, as we'll see, is arguments to the kernels. OK, so that's OpenCL kind of background. Let's look at a specific example. We're going to write something which is going to take two vectors, A and B, and multiply them together and put the result in C. So here's the way you would do it sequentially. You have a for loop, iterates over the number of elements. And here's a kernel function. So first of all, you know it's a kernel. It's got the keyword there. Then you see some things which correspond to these arguments. They're global. They're stuck in global memory. And then this is the interesting bit down here. Rather than the for loop, we have this call which says get global ID. So when this work item starts up, the first thing it says is, where am I? What piece of data am I supposed to be working on? It gets back essentially the index into the array, and then it multiplies and stores away its part of the job. So here's how one goes about building an OpenCL program in general, what the kind of flow is. You start off by querying the platform for the various OpenCL devices, find one you like. You create a context. This is a little bit like a GL context. It's your kind of main point of entry into subsequent operations. Next thing you do is create programs. You select kernels that you want to execute. You create any memory objects. These are things that are in that global memory. And then you start transferring memory and providing the and executing kernels. And finally, copying results back to the host. So it's rather kind of roundabout. A lot of setup needed, but of course, this is fairly standard stuff, and it's easy to kind of put it into a library so the developer doesn't have to worry too much about it. Okay, so let's see some actual demos. So these are now WebCL demos rather than OpenCL, but. Let's see what we can do here. Let's see, where did it go? Okay. The first thing is we're going to run an image filter here. And I'm going to choose between JavaScript and WebCL. So let's just run it in JavaScript. Took about half a second there. Now I'm going to switch to WebCL using the GPU. Run it, took 10 milliseconds. So same operation in a browser, but you know, vastly different performance. Let's look at another one. This is an N-body simulation. So I can switch between drawing and GL and just Canvas 2D. So I'm going to turn on kind of 3D drawing. I've got this cluster of particles that are kind of pulsing under kind of mutual gravitational attraction. This is in JavaScript, so we're getting the simulation, calculating the positions of those particles is taking about 170 milliseconds. Draw is fast. Now I'm going to turn it into OpenCL mode, WebCL, and we want to watch this number here. So it went from 170 roughly down to 5 or 6. So a good couple of a good you know order of magnitude improvement there. Finally, another one here. So this is a WebGL demo, and what we've got is two spheres in essentially a texture box, and we've got shaders on here. This one's you know semi-transparent. This one's reflective, and you can see it's nice and interactive. And I'm getting about 100 or so frames per second. Sim mode is off. What I'm going to do is I'm going to turn on a simulation, which is going to take those 3D objects, the spheres, and run a kind of a noise function on the geometry in JavaScript, first of all. So here we are in JavaScript. You can see the geometry's changing. There's some kind of flashing going on. I've gone down to three frames per second. So from 100 to 3, just by turning on that calculation. Now, if I click again, I'll go into WebCL, and we're back at interactive frame rates, and the simulation time is just 5 or 6 milliseconds. So it can generally give you, I think it's safe to say, an order of magnitude improvement over basic JavaScript code. Okay. So let's look at how you actually might write those samples there. So I'm going to go back to the slides. Oops. Programming WebCL. So initialization. The very first step is to get a platform. I didn't really mention what platforms are, but OpenCL allows you to have multiple OpenCL implementations. For example, think you might have a graphics card. It has its implementation. The CPU might have its another one. You get another graphics card. So those different implementations are called platforms. And one of the first things, the very first thing you have to do is get hold of a platform, look at it, see if it's the one you want. Once you have a platform, you can ask for a device. So here we're asking for a GPU type of device. And then you create your contacts and your command queue. So that's pretty straightforward. Next step is you want to have a kernel. So just like WebGL and its shaders, kernels are put right into a DOM element, or at least this is one way you can do it. So here we have a piece of script. It says it's a type kernel, and here is the actual kernel source here. So this is written in what is called OpenCLC. It's the subset of C99. It's got a few special additions, for example, vector data types and some special image operators. Here's the JavaScript code for obtaining the kernel. So first of all, we get the program source, this string essentially here, using this call here. And this API isn't part of WebCL itself. It's just something which uses existing, for example, DOM, you know, get element by ID type APIs. These are all now WebCL calls here. We create a program object, create program. We build it. So this is, if you have any problems in here, this is where the compiler will complain. And then there might be several kernels in here. You pull out the one that you want to use. And you've got a handle now on the kernel. So create kernel square. That was the name of this kernel up here. Okay. Next step is to create some memory objects. So we have to pass data into that. And there's an API called create buffer. We give a hint. Is this stuff that from the GPU side we want to read, we want to write, or we want to do both? And then we give it the size. So here what we're doing is we're taking a big array of floats of this number of elements. Then we create the data that we're going to use. So here we just create an array of float 32, give it some numbers. Then this is where we start to use the command queue. We say we want to transfer this array here into this memory object, input buffer. So this is how you do it. And these things can potentially take a long time, so you can do it asynchronously or synchronously, depending upon this flag here. Then we set up our kernel. We set the kernel arguments. There were three of them, these three arguments here. This is where we give them the values, the memory objects, and then we're also telling it how many elements we have. This step here is where we figure out what workgroup size we should use, and there's a handy query that can help with that. And then finally, we ask the GPU to execute that kernel with the data that's sitting in these buffers now. Then we get the data back. As I said, these can be asynchronous. We might want to wait until everything's finished. Here's where we get things back here. So here we're going to wait until the execution is finished, and then we're going to read the data back. And those are the basic steps you'll need to go through, at least with a single kernel. Okay. So that really looks like straight OpenCL kind of translated into JavaScript. What are some of the special things that WebCL builds? Because, you know, we're now dealing with web applications, with, you know, images and so on. Are there some things that we can simplify? So OpenCL and WebCL have special image objects. These allow you to make use of the texturing hardware, for example, for subpixel sampling of an image if you're doing a filter. If you're just working in straight OpenCL, when you create one of these image objects, you have to do stuff like this. You have to say how many pixels you have, how many bytes per pixel, figure out what the pitch is, how many bytes in a row type of thing. And then you give this create image, an image descriptor, which has all this information packed into it. With WebCL, if your image, for example, comes from an image tag or a canvas or a video element, you can just do something like this. Get hold of the element and then create image with the element there. And all this image descriptor is, you know, calculated, determined by the implementation. Okay, so let's take a look at part of one of the samples, the one with the sphere that we were deforming. These samples are kind of interesting because they use both WebGL and WebCL. And it turns out that there's some special, what they call interoperability APIs that allow you to share data between the two. So as an example, let's look at both the initialization and the draw loop. So this is WebGL code here, and what we're doing is we're setting up a so-called VBO, vertex buffer object. And this is basically an array with the positions of all the vertices of your geometry. So we create the buffer object here, and here we fill it with some data. So points is the JavaScript array that's going to supply that data. Then in WebCL, we can create from GL buffer a memory object. So this CL vertex buffer and GL vertex buffer are essentially the same thing. One's used by GL, one's used by CL. Now, let's say we want to do this type of thing. So in this case, before we draw, we run some compute over that geometry. The first thing we do is we call this in queue acquire GL objects. So this basically blocks until GL happens to be finished with that stuff. Once we get hold of it, we can change it in WebCL, and then we can release it, and then GL can now draw it. So we enable that kind of sharing of buffers or objects between the two. Okay. Here's a very similar type of application where now we're doing texture animation. I won't go through it, but again, in this case, we have a texture object which is created by GL but is manipulated, so a dynamic texture in WebGL. The one interesting thing here is that this is an example of a kernel which uses... Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say it was an example of a 2D kernel, but this is an old version of the slides. But you could use tiling in this kernel. Okay, a very quick word about prototype status. It turns out there's three. Nokia has a prototype for Firefox, Samsung for WebKit, and Motorola recently has done something using Node.js. They all cover much the same functionality. Slight differences. The WebCL specification is evolving, but a lot of it is there. If you wanted to use our implementation, basically we have classes which implement the main WebCL objects, and it's for WebKit. That means each of these objects has a so-called interface definition language, a file which creates those bindings for JavaScript, and you can then use, if you go to our where we've put the code, you'll be able to download instructions on how you can generate these files and build a new WebKit-based browser which uses them. So, another point I wanted to mention is that we're releasing updates of this. We've released, I think, three so far. They're all available at this site here. And then just to summarize the performance evaluation, as you saw in the demos, we're getting speed ups, usually a factor of 10, sometimes much more. Actually, it's kind of interesting. Why just a factor of 10 here and why nearly a factor of 100 there? That's because this data here, each work item kind of touches data which is used by every other one. whereas this one here, they're more or less independent. So you get much better kind of memory access behavior in this one than you do in that one. Okay. So now I'd like to pass things over to my colleague, Tasneem Brooch, who will discuss the WebCL standardization.
Thank you, Simon. Can you guys hear me? So my name is Tasneem Brooch. I chair the WebCL working group in Kronos. And this effort, as Simon has gone through, kind of a combination of we've done some work in our own prototype. Nokia has a prototype implementation, and so does Motorola at this time. So we have a very broad representation of industry members in our WebCL working group, and this has been a really good experience we've been having with this. A lot of interest in the community from the hardware vendors, from the device driver vendors, from browser vendors. We have got Mozilla, Opera, Google, all of them participating from the browser side. Hardware vendors, we have AMD, Intel, NVIDIA, ARM. So a broad spectrum of people, a broad spectrum of application developers, and a broad spectrum of both browser vendors and hardware vendors. So the focus, as mentioned earlier, what are we trying to achieve? We're trying to standardize an approach by providing JavaScript binding to OpenCL. We would like it to be portable, efficient, and access to heterogeneous multi-core devices from the web content, be it your multi-core processor, be it your GPU, anything that is addressable as an OpenCL device. And OpenCL, by definition, gives you access to heterogeneous devices, multi-core devices. Define an ECMA API, ECMAScript API for interfacing with OpenCL, as noted earlier. From the get-go, we have been focusing on security and robustness. We want it to be secure and robust and efficient, while at the same time portable across devices and a standardized approach, so people can write once and run everywhere without having an issue or a concern regarding security or performance. And we would like to be able to provide them with performance that's not only acceptable, but much more enhanced compared to what they can get currently from JavaScript. The current direction for the WebCL 1.0, which we are hoping to release by the end of the year, is that it will be built on OpenCL embedded profile. There's not a whole lot of difference between OpenCL full profile and embedded profile. However, some of the precision and some of the other features are just kind of limited based upon and targeted towards your embedded devices in general. But again, this particular goal is for WebCL 1.0, as we are targeting. Going forward, it will be a discussion to be had whether we go base it on full profile or embedded profile. And obviously, between interoperability of CL and GL, The interoperability between OpenCL and OpenGL is implemented as an extension in OpenCL, whereas the WebCL working group has decided to make that part of the core spec. So any platform which has support for WebGL and WebCL running on it will allow interoperability between CL and GL to facilitate not only the use cases targeting the compute and enhancement of computation, but also facilitating the drawing aspect and the graphics aspect of that as well. So we have another proposal in the spirit of making it more portable, making initialization simpler for people, making it easier for people to be able to write applications without having to write a whole lot of boilerplate code. Samsung also has a proposal on portability. I just wanted to give people a bird's eye view of what we have done in security, where we plan on going, and what kind of security threats we are addressing. So information leakage, we want to make sure there's no information leakage, be it between contexts, be it between various tabs of a browser application, no information leakage, and prevention of denial of service. So the first focus that the browser vendors wanted was denial of service prevention from long-running kernels, and these could be erroneous kernels, these could be malicious kernels, any kernels that may take up resources, time being one of them, of a system more than is allocated to them, more than what may result in the potential instability of the system. So to map to these security threats, we have the following security requirements: preventing cross-origin information leakage, meaning that if there's information that is created by one originating website, we would not want it to leak to the other, very similar to what we WebGL is looking at. Prevention for out-of-bound memory accesses, memory initialization, prevention of denial of service, and we also wanted to make sure that any behavior which is undefined currently in OpenCL and left to the specific browser driver vendors and hardware vendors to implement in their runtime and in their drivers, that it does get defined. In the interest of time, I'll just go briefly through it without taking too much time. So out-of-bound memory accesses here, what we want to make sure is any out-of-bound reads do not give access to information that is not authorized. Any out-of-bound writes are not permitted. And memory initialization, meaning any time a kernel starts, any time a kernel ends, it not only initializes at startup time, but at termination type time, it cleans up after itself. So any other kernel, any other application coming along does not have the ability to access the information that may have been left sitting around over there. Denial of service, as I mentioned earlier, being able to set a time limit and be able to terminate that context. And I wanted to give a little bit of a background here. The idea being, what currently happens right now is if you have a kernel that consumes too much of the GPU resources, it ends up eventually locking up the GPU, requiring a reset of the GPU. And we want to make sure that doesn't happen. So prevent that from happening, we want to allow the browser applications to be able to say, okay, for a given kernel associated with this context, I do not want any of these kernels to take more than the T time window. And if it does, then I would like to get a notification of that via callback, and I would like to be able to terminate that. Because we would rather allow the browser the ability to terminate an offending kernel than to wait until it leads to the lockup of a GPU and hence the eventual reset of it. So it's kind of, we want always to be able to make sure not only is it secure, and which is why these proposals that we have presented in front of the OpenCL working group, we're calling robustness and security, because this is one example of robustness. We want to make sure that our solution is robust in addition to secure. And you know, as noted here, we have presented these as four different proposals to the OpenCL working group, because for most of these, we require changes or support from the OpenCL driver. And so we have presented these. The proposals are under discussion, and we're working very closely, not only with the OpenCL working group, but also with the WebGL working group, to ensure that not only we have a secure solution, but also the security provisions that are provided, that we have cognizance of what WebGL working group is doing, so that the hardware vendors, the driver vendors, when they implement the changes in their respective device drivers and looking forward onto their roadmaps of their hardware, they have understanding of the bar that both WebCL and WebGL are presenting regarding security. So just wanted to give, you know, again, an overview of the status. We have released the first working draft. It was released in April, and it can be accessed from the public website. public_webcl@kronos.org is a mailing list which we have made available, where non-Kronos members can participate, contribute, and be part of the discussions. The conformance test suite, traditional to the way Kronos works is every vendor needs to provide the conformance tests for their respective implementation. So the vendors are, in our case, Samsung, Nokia, and Motorola, who have currently prototypes in this space. They would be contributing to the definition, and along with the rest of the members, of conformance tests as a whole and their specific implementations. We are planning, as noted, the release of the WebCL specification in the second half of 2012. And as I had mentioned earlier, we've been very encouraged regarding not only the participation, the contribution, and also the interest of the spectrum, the broad spectrum of vendors, all the way from hardware to driver vendors to application developers, gaming developers, browser vendors. We have all three major browser vendors actively participating. We've got Intel, AMD, ARM, a number of vendors from that point of view, NVIDIA, that have been participating from the hardware side, companies like Electronic Arts that write applications in the gaming space. Just wanted to mention a couple here. So we would like to not only, we wanted to take this the opportunity to present this work, but also have a call for participation for non-Kronos members to be part of this effort. And please become engaged, and we thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to come here and present our work. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Would you please use this mic?
So you were showing some flop stats on things instead of just the rendering rates, and I was just wondering what proportion of the full capability of the GPU you're getting?
That will, you know, vary from between those different applications. I don't have exact numbers here. But if we look at the, you know, the throughput, the total number of floating point operations that are being performed to, you know, during those demos, I think we're GPU utilization is in the, you know, the high 50-60 percent rate.
Well, of course, also that varies based on your application, how parallelizable your application is, and how embarrassingly parallel it may be. So it may vary from application to application, and also from your specific algorithm to another algorithm as well.
Is it possible to determine what are the name, perhaps, of what other process is currently using a resource that I want to monopolize?
Could you, when you say you want to monopolize,
if I wanted to make a call to use the GPUs and they're busy, can I determine who else is using them?
Well, that would be, you know, that would be more on the kind of the OS based, how much OS is providing support for your processes running on various devices. As far as OpenCL and WebCL is concerned, you know, as noted in Simon's example earlier, there's a concept of an OpenCL device. So you can either pick, application developer has the ability to select which specific OpenCL device, be it a CPU or GPU or another accelerator, you would like a specific kernel to be able to run to, or you can leave it up to the system to be able to allocate it to the next available device. So the level of support you're asking would need to be provided in the operating system. So that would not be an OpenCL or WebCL specific feature.
This would be last question.
Do you have any guideline how to decide the group size, memory model, or the CPU-GPU selection?
That's a very good question. I think there are a few things that you can do there. One is to perhaps do some trial runs with different numbers and observe what your actual rates are. Another, you can query and find out what is the local memory size, what is the maximum thread group size, if I'm running a 2D or 3D kernel, how many. What are the limits on the kind of tile sizes for each of those dimensions? But I think to really get the maximum potential out of the GPU, you have to look at which GPU this is and how does it actually work, what's its actual memory architecture, what's its kind of pipeline architecture, for example. Yeah, vendors will.
In a lot of these cases, when you look at a specific GPU, vendors have been published either as BKMs, best known mappers, or recommendations, to where they would have a recommendation of the suggested size. Again, that particular selection would be specific to the OpenCL device in this question and the architecture of that device.
Thank you, Simon and Tasneem. Please applaud again of Leo Dam again. Thank you.